ECDC On Air,
the podcast of the European Centre for Disease Prevention and Control.
Keeping up to date with European epidemiology.
Hello, my name is Nicholas and I'm your host for today's episode of ECDC On Air, which is the podcast for the European Centre for Disease Prevention and Control. Today we're going to be talking about surveillance for respiratory viruses in the EU and a new tool for displaying this data. With me to explain more about this, I have Nick Bundle, who is an ECDC expert on respiratory viruses and has been part of a team to set up the European Respiratory Viruses Surveillance Summary, or in shorter form, ERVIS. So welcome, Nick. Can you start off by explaining what you do at ECDC and what your work entails?
Thanks, Nicholas. Thanks for having me. Yeah, so I work in a group called Respiratory Viruses and Legionella Group. We're probably about 8 people working on respiratory viruses. The main viruses we focus on are influenza, SARS-CoV-2, so that's the virus that causes COVID-19 disease, and increasingly RSV as well. Myself, the main responsibilities are on the surveillance of these pathogens. So we collect data on a weekly basis from 30 EU and EEA member states. We do a lot of work around cleaning, processing, analyzing, and then also displaying and interpreting that data to inform risk assessment and our understanding of the kind of epidemiological situation on an ongoing basis. We work very closely with the countries that are providing this data. We have to define the metadata, so the kind of way in which the data should be reported and the types of variables that we collect. And then all these data are collected in a database called TESI, which is the European Surveillance System, which is then common database for all the pathogens that are under surveillance here at ECDC. We work also quite closely with the WHO Regional Office for Europe, do most of the surveillance jointly with them. We have a surveillance network. So again, this is how ECDC carries out surveillance. There are nominated focal points in each country with people with expertise in epidemiology and also in microbiology. And so our network comprises these individuals. And so working closely with them, we're able to do this surveillance. So it's very much a collaborative effort between technical experts in the member states and then our work here at ECDC and also colleagues at WHO at the kind of supranational level.
You mentioned there a number of respiratory viruses that your unit is looking at specifically. Are those the ones that are the most serious to Europe?
There are a number of respiratory viruses that circulate in humans and that cause disease, you know, pretty much every year. So I mentioned influenza, SARS-CoV-2 and RSV. They are three of the major pathogens, but there's also other human coronaviruses. There's parainfluenza, there's rhinovirus, enteroviruses, human metapneumovirus and adenovirus. They're all kind of circulating, and at the national level, countries will be following those very closely through their surveillance systems. Here at the EU level, then we're only collecting data routinely on those three that I mentioned. As I said, these viruses circulate in humans. Most of them have quite well-established seasonality. So influenza, I mean, the traditional flu surveillance kind of period ran from week 40, so in the autumn of each year, through to week 20, so through to kind of, you know, the spring. So it's during that period that you would expect most influenza activity, often with a peak in the, you know, early weeks of the new year. But the coronavirus pandemic has affected actually the seasonality of many of these pathogens. We saw a very late influenza season a couple of years ago with quite high activity that went even beyond the end of the traditional flu surveillance period. SARS-CoV-2 hasn't yet really settled into a predictable seasonal pattern. We've had summer epidemics of COVID, I think, every year since the beginning of the pandemic. The activity has been highest in the winter. And this is a common feature really of all respiratory viruses. I mean, they transmit when humans are in closer proximity. So of course, with the colder weather, you know, the behavior changes and people tend to spend more time closer together and indoors. And then RSV activity will pick up what we've seen certainly in the most recent years, that activity can pick up quite early and often, you know, earlier than flu activity. And then, of course, there's been, you know, quite widely reported in the media kind of tripledemics where we see co-circulation of all these three pathogens together. And that's something we're particularly interested in following now and understanding the kind of different dynamics of these three viruses and looking in a more holistic, integrated view, which I think we'll probably be able to talk about when we talk about the new platform.
I think when it comes to SARS-CoV-2, I mean, we all have our experiences from that. We've all lived through the pandemic. Something that sometimes seems to go a little bit under the radar is influenza. Can you give some reflections on, do you think that it's actually being given the attention that it deserves? Or is it a kind of a disease that people don't seem to think that it's actually a very big problem? It gives you a bit of a sneeze and a cough.
Yeah, I mean, I think people describing that they've got the flu is, you know, it's quite common. That's in common parlance and it's commonly used to describe when people have generally quite mild respiratory illness. I mean, influenza is a major concern. The majority of infections will be mild and, you know, a good proportion of the population will be infected every year. But with a large number of infections, and then of course you still get substantial numbers of people requiring hospitalization or admission into ICU or with deaths. And we see, depending on the intensity of the season and the type of influenza that's circulating, you know, we can see tens of thousands of deaths due to influenza every year here in the EU. The impact of COVID-19, and of course, the impact in terms of severe disease diminished over the course of the pandemic as different, well, particularly once the Omicron variant became dominant, but also the impact of the, I mean, really important impact of the COVID-19 vaccination, you know, very high immunity due to vaccination and also due to natural immunity through infection has meant that the population now is much, much better protected against COVID than it was. And that protection, whilst it wanes, is still quite high in a population level. I mean, this last winter, we saw peaking at around week 50, so just towards the end of the year. We saw kind of quite sustained increases in COVID-19 from around September. And this did result not in the same very, very high peaks of hospitalization and deaths in most countries that we'd seen previously, but quite a sustained kind of gradual increase, certainly when you look at it at the EU level, in terms of severe disease, which does, you know, result in lots and lots of people that are seriously unwell. So despite the success of the vaccination programs and the high level of population immunity, then, you know, COVID also does really cause a problem still. But thankfully, not at the same levels as we observed early on in the pandemic. Influenza, as mentioned, is a major issue. The thing with flu is it changes a lot. And so there's a need to update the vaccine for the Northern Hemisphere and also for the Southern Hemisphere. So there's kind of two cycles of the review of the composition of that vaccine each year. And there's no guarantee that the strains that go into the vaccine will necessarily be a good match to what ends up circulating, because it's based on an assessment of what's been circulating to try and produce a best guess really of what's going to then be circulating in Northern Hemisphere. And then the other thing is the different strains of influenza or the different types of influenza can cause different levels of severity. And so the AH3 is typically thought of causing more severe disease than the AH1, which was the pandemic strain of influenza from 2009. And so depending on the type of flu that's circulating, you know, then the impact can be different as well.
Is it kind of like a newcomer on the scene? Would you say, I mean, RSV, it's not been getting as much attention as influenza before, but now it seems to be more talked about.
It's certainly not a new virus. It's been around for a very long time and it's, you know, caused epidemics annually, pretty much, with really quite substantial impact in very, very young infants. And so it's the leading cause of severe hospitalization, or a leading cause of severe hospitalization amongst very, very young infants. But it also can be really quite severe in elderly people as well. And I think the reason it's become more prominent of late now is the availability of new vaccines. And so we have vaccines that have been licensed and are in use now in in elderly populations, with some quite promising impacts there. And then also last year, EMA licensed the first vaccine for use in pregnant women, intended to provide passive immunity for newborns. So, you know, the protection is passed down from the mother to the child. And there's also monoclonal antibody therapies, which can be given to newborns, which seem to be quite promising, or very promising really, in terms of the effectiveness of those as well. I think now it's probably become more prominent and, you know, more mentioned in the media, because now we have some very effective tools to combat it.
Would you say that respiratory virus surveillance is a big priority for ECDC?
It is a priority, of course. Respiratory viruses are guaranteed to cause substantial morbidity and mortality pretty much every winter. We see this, you know, even in the crudest of metrics, which is kind of excess mortality, where you compare the observed number of deaths with the expected number of deaths. I mean, every winter you would expect to see some kind of signal in excess mortality, and at least some of that will be driven by respiratory virus circulation. And so, yeah, these are important. And because of the timeliness of the data, so we collect data on a weekly basis, which for almost all pathogens under surveillance by ECDC, that the frequency is less frequent than that. So we do have data that is reasonably timely, and so that can therefore be used to inform decisions around healthcare planning, and also for understanding the risk and understanding sort of where we are in, not in real time, but in, you know, with quite good timeliness, understanding where we are in terms of the phase of the epidemic.
Before we go into more detail about the ERVIS tool, I just wanted to understand a bit. The SARS-CoV-2 pandemic really shook everything up in many different ways. In terms of how we look at the surveillance of respiratory viruses, what effect would you say that it had?
During the pandemic, it was, of course, unprecedented in terms of the attention politically and, you know, from the public, but also in terms of the resource, I think, that was poured into the response by countries at the, you know, and at the international level as well. So, you know, staffing and money were available in a way that they're not normally during a normal kind of respiratory season, to monitor the spread of disease, its severity. And so that, I think, resulted in very rich data, very timely data. And I think, you know, people started getting used to having, you know, very timely, quite granular data around the dynamics of COVID-19. That said, the other aspect as well, I think, was the amount of genomic surveillance. There was a huge amount of whole genome sequencing of the virus, which became particularly important when we started having the emergence of these variants of concerns, which had, you know, different characteristics in terms of severity or immune evasion. That was carried out at a level at which we, you know, had never really been happened before. And I think the hope was that there will be some of the benefits from that would now carry through into the post-pandemic era. Now, of course, the reality is that countries have to shift their resources back to a more normal footing. And so it isn't possible to maintain the level of activity now as was maintained during the pandemic. But I think there are some, you know, benefits still that can filter down for kind of routine disease surveillance. The other thing was that the focus during the pandemic was really on counting cases, for better or worse. I mean, this is very normal when there's a new pathogen. You really want to know where the new cases are occurring. But really, the surveillance kind of started out being that, and then it continued being that. And, you know, we continued for many years to report the number of new positive tests and follow the epidemic really in terms of counts of reported positive COVID tests, and, you know, then also in terms of trends in hospitalization, ICU admissions and deaths. But that was never the way that respiratory virus, particularly influenza surveillance, was done in the past. And that's also the way we're going now, is to move back to a more stable, less resource intensive method of surveillance, which relies on the use of sentinel surveillance, which is where you have a small, relatively small number of representative healthcare sites. So they could be primary care, you know, GP practices, or also secondary care, so hospitals, that are carefully selected so as to represent the wider population of the country. And then you can do more focused surveillance activities only at those sites. So you can count the number of patients presenting with a specific set of symptoms, which can then give you, if you know the underlying population of the GP practice or the hospital, you can then estimate rates of respiratory illness in general in the population. And that's kind of the entry point. And then you can test a subset of those presenting patients for different respiratory viruses. And so we recommend and pretty much all EU/EA countries now are doing what's called multiplex testing. So you can, from the same specimen, you can test for multiple pathogens. And so through that, you can see which pathogen is causing those respiratory symptoms in the presenting patients. And so that requires you not to count all the positive tests, and it requires you not to test everybody. I mean, there was a reason for testing so widely during the pandemic, to partly to also to control the disease as well. But, you know, using this less resource intensive method, then it is possible still to track quite reliably trends of disease in the population.
So now the European Respiratory Viruses Surveillance Summary, ERVIS, we're recording this in February 2024, so it's been running for a few months.
Yeah, certainly.
Can you tell us a little bit more about it? What does it feature?
Yeah, so it is a joint undertaking with the WHO Regional Office for Europe. So we kind of conceived and developed this jointly with them, and we sort of coded it up in-house. We use R, which is an open source kind of statistical analysis software. And so we did all the coding in-house. It's a website, basically an interactive website, which presents the data that we collect primarily through TESI, which I mentioned previously, the weekly routine respiratory surveillance data. And we also take some additional data from the GISAID database for SARS-CoV-2 genomic sequencing data. And we present various views in what is a kind of dashboard format, showing information on influenza, SARS-CoV-2 and RSV. And then we write an interpretive summary every week describing the epidemiology at the EU level, with some detail around what's happening, you know, at country level as well. Because it's interactive, you can see, like, the default view is to see plots aggregated up to the level of the EU/EA, but users can either filter in time or filter by place as well to look at groups of countries or individual countries. And there's also a number of plots where you can see the same indicator plotted for all the countries side by side to allow for comparison there as well.
Just for our audience here, if they want to go and visit the site, can you spell out the website?
Yeah, so www.ervis, that's ervis.org. So go to there, you'll go to the landing page, and you click on the EU/EEA view if you're interested in seeing what's happening at the regional level.
And what is the main target audience?
The target audience, I would say primarily is mixed. Primarily would be our network. So our national counterparts, I'd say, are keen users of this platform to understand what's happening in countries surrounding their country, what's happening kind of internationally within Europe. Additionally, the European Commission are keen users of this. WHO, you know, like at headquarters. Also, the media. I think the media interest in respiratory viruses has never been as high as it was during the pandemic. And I suspect that, you know, media interest, while of course it would have waned since now in this post-pandemic era, then I think the media probably have become much more literate at understanding and interpreting these kind of surveillance data. And I think also interested members of the general public can get a lot from this. I mean, it's not written in a way that, you know, is designed for kind of your complete average lay user, but people who are familiar with the concepts, absolutely, it's possible to take, I think, very useful insights from it.
How often is it updated, and how do you get the data from the member states?
So as mentioned, we have weekly data collection via TESI. So the countries are responsible for uploading their data to TESI. The submission deadline is Wednesday midnight. And then on Thursday morning, we start processing the data, which takes most of Thursday to then kind of validate and check that it all appears correctly in our kind of test version of the tool. Then on sort of late Thursday afternoon, Friday morning, we interpret and write the summary. And then it's published usually early on a Friday afternoon.
Is it going to be an all year round thing or just?
Yeah, so our guidance to member states has been to actually expand surveillance beyond just the traditional flu season, which was, as mentioned, week 40 to week 20, into year round surveillance. COVID really has been a key driver of that. And as I mentioned, there's not properly established seasonality yet for COVID. And so that's a good imperative to do that. And so our intention is to keep publishing this year round. If we get into a pattern of seeing very well established predictable seasonality, then, you know, it's possible to revisit that. But I think it's really of interest to keep monitoring these pathogens and understand what's circulating, even if at low levels throughout the year.
So previously, flu was monitored through another tool called Flu News Europe. We had weekly surveillance reports on COVID-19. Now they're all combined here on the IRVIS website. Can you talk a little bit about the advantages of having everything together in one place?
I mean, apart from the obvious kind of efficiencies of putting everything, analyzing everything together and putting it all into one platform, it just makes sense, really, from an epidemiological perspective. Flu News Europe was the European flu surveillance output when really flu was the main circulating pathogen. That did also contain information on RSV. So, you know, there was voluntary RSV surveillance that's been ongoing. So we've been collecting data on RSV for many, many years in TESI and displaying that as well. But really the main focus for Flu News Europe was influenza. And then the pandemic gave birth to various COVID-specific surveillance outputs. But as we moved into kind of consolidating the surveillance following the acute phase of the pandemic, moving towards a more sustainable method using these, like primarily using sentinel surveillance, as I explained, but also still continue to collect data from other systems where it's available, it just made much more sense to show these data on a single platform. And when you have a sentinel system where you have a common case definition to define which cases you count with respiratory illness, and then if you're testing, you know, the same specimen for all these pathogens, then that's the really solid basis for actually being able to compare the trajectories of the different pathogens side by side and see which one is causing relatively more disease than the other. And you know, then thinking through what does that mean in terms of severe disease and potential impact in hospitals or on mortality as well.
Can you explain a bit more about how this information can be used to support public health decisions?
Yeah, on a personal level, if you're interested in knowing what's circulating, if you're someone in a risk group, then I think it's very helpful to understand in your country or in a country you may be planning to travel to, the level of transmission of different respiratory pathogens. At the level of healthcare system planning, then we can see very early on when activity starts for different pathogens. And so if you start to see our RSV activity increasing or then starting to climb rapidly, then that, you know, really will be a strong signal that there's likely to be an increased number of young infants becoming very sick with that in the hospital. So you can use that to then prepare your pediatric beds accordingly. The majority of the severe disease, you know, continues to occur in elderly populations, you know, particularly for COVID, similarly for influenza, although to some extent flu affects kind of all the age groups a bit more evenly than SARS-CoV-2. So again, you know, this can be very helpful for understanding healthcare capacity planning and also, you know, for long-term care facilities, for example, for the elderly care homes where, you know, you're extremely vulnerable populations, understanding that the flu epidemic or, you know, an epidemic of SARS-CoV-2 or RSV is underway. It's also important there to take preventative measures in those settings. The other vital component of this is vaccine composition. And this is, you know, one of the really important functions of this surveillance is to understand what viruses are circulating, to do further characterization of those viruses, you know, to sequence them, understand the kind of genetic composition, but also the kind of antigenic properties and how well they respond to different antivirals as well. And there's a whole, as I mentioned earlier, there's a whole process driven by WHO globally to have a biannual process of looking at reviewing the composition of circulating influenza viruses to then inform the composition of the vaccine for the next season, alternating between the northern and southern hemisphere. And so that's a, you know, incredibly important part of this surveillance. And also for SARS-CoV-2, you know, for COVID, it's quite likely, I mean, it's too early to say, but we may move into a situation where there is a similar process of annual or periodic review and updates of the vaccine according to which variant is circulating. And you know, we've already seen a number of rounds of variant-specific vaccines which have been released and then, you know, updated according to what's dominant now. The final piece, I think, is, so it talks around informing vaccine composition, but you can also use surveillance data to monitor the impact of vaccinations. And we saw with the pandemic just how the severity of COVID was affected once vaccines were introduced and rolled out at scale. These RSV vaccines, then the surveillance data, I think, will be a very useful tool to really start to understand what the real world impact of those would have been as well once we have, you know, a couple of years of data and more widespread use of those behind us.
Okay, thanks, Nick. That's all the questions I have for you today. Thanks for joining me on ECDC On Air.
Thanks for the opportunity.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of ECDC On Air. For more information about ECDC and its work, please visit us on the web at ecdc.europa.eu or follow us on social media.